And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Denbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, June 19, 2018. An opposition spokesman warns his side is not ready to accept a peace deal unless they get more power in government.
We aspire for good peace. Unfortunately, as this HLRF have reached a conclusion yesterday, we come to realize that potential of having a good peace is up in the air.
We'll have this story and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir and his former First Vice President Riek Machar are due to meet in Addis Ababa tomorrow, according to several wire reports. Yesterday, a spokesman for Machar's group said the rebel leader would arrive on Wednesday and the two leaders would meet on Thursday. The IGAD-sponsored talks are supposed to help facilitate an end to the conflict. A Reuters report is quoting a statement made by Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed that the aim of the meeting is to bridge the gaps between the two leaders. Machar has been in South Africa under house arrest, according to senior members of the SPLM-IO. The government has denied that it asked the South African government to detain Machar. South Sudan's opposition alliance says its leaders will not sign an agreement that allocates more positions to President Salva Kiir's side than the opposition side in a future transitional government. Opposition alliance spokesman Kwaje Lasu says the latest proposal presented by IGAD to the warring parties gives President Kiir more power compared to the other leaders of the warring parties. And he says the opposition will not sign a peace deal that does not address the root causes of South Sudan's conflict.
We went for the high-level revitalization forum with a hope of reaching a peace settlement, a lasting peace for the people of South Sudan. In other words, we aspire for good peace. Unfortunately, as this HLRF have reached a conclusion yesterday, we come to realize that potential of having a good peace is up in the air. Therefore, we feel like this upcoming agreement may bring the country back to the crisis. And therefore, we, for the interests of the people of South Sudan, we will not be able to sign anything that is detriment to our people on the ground.
And what is your definition of genuine and lasting peace?
We must address the core root causes of this crisis before we engage into other issues related to peace. Once we address that, that will pave the road for genuine peace in our country.
Last time you said the government has no political will to end the conflict in South Sudan. Now you are doing exactly what you are accusing the government of doing.
Unfortunately, the opposite is true. Let us put it very clear. The position of government is the position of IGAD. IGAD has been towing or has been presenting on behalf of the government of South Sudan. And that's why we are in this critical juncture as we move along.
Are you telling me that IGAD is not neutral in this conflict?
The biasness of IGAD is very clear from the get-go. Knowingly, IGAD state has have vested interests in South Sudan. Therefore, any agreement is a potential for compromise, as we have seen. Now, case in point, when we went to Addis Ababa, first and foremost, in February, while discussing the issues, even before addressing the core issues, IGAD presented us with a proposal that we did not like in February, a proposal that is stipulating on the position of the government of South Sudan. And I can tell you, among some of our meetings, a member of South Sudan delegation confessed that this their position. That was in February. Now, comes May, we've been presented with a similar position termed bridging proposal. That bridging proposal is equally the same proposal of the government of South Sudan. Now, we went again to Addis Ababa in June under the auspices or the interlink intensive consultation, whereby it will give us opportunity to discuss issues. we've been presented with a revitalized bridging proposal by the Council of Ministers. This final document is rather insignificant changes compared to the three documents presented. Unfortunately, through all these three documents that presented to us, IGAD have given us a time frame to respond. And when we respond, our position that we responded on was not discussed with us, neither with other parties. Therefore, how can IGAD just come up as with a bridging proposal without addressing or discussing what we have presented to them?
And in these bridging proposals, what are the things that you are not comfortable with? Because you cannot just say the document is the position of the government. There must be things that you don't like. What are these things?
We demanding having parliament at the constituency of the 170, but the government want to maintain, actually rather increase the parliament from 400 to 420. And then eventually now they're going to go with another 25% increment. Secondly, we demanded that the federal system has to be initiated from the get-go of the transition period. The government refused that. Thirdly, we demand that just for the sake of the country or for the sake of the people, we will not, as politicians, will not be part of the government. Let the government run by a technocrat or hybrid technocrat that we wanted to see happen. All this, a contrary government will not want to do that. In fact, we trying to come down so we can be able to have a functioning government in the country, but the government wants to increase the number. I think government have failed or misunderstood the inclusivity. Inclusivity not necessarily accommodation, and government want to accommodate that, but we know we're not for accommodation. We want an inclusive government representing the people of South Sudan. And that inclusive government can be 18 ministers. It doesn't necessarily have to be 42 ministers.
That was Kwaje Lasu, spokesman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, speaking from South Carolina with my colleague John Tanza earlier today. On this International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, the heads of mission of 9 Western countries, including the United States, are calling on all parties in the South Sudan conflict to stop using sexual violence as a tool of war and to stop violating the cessation of hostilities agreement. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
In a joint statement issued today, the top diplomats of Canada, Denmark, Japan, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the U.S. say sexual violence is happening on an appalling scale and with impunity in South Sudan. Speaking on behalf of the ambassadors from the 9 countries, Natasha Harrington, Second Secretary for Political and Human Rights Affairs at the British Embassy in Juba, expressed concern about numerous reports indicating women continue to suffer at the hands of rebel fighters and government forces in the ongoing conflict.
The use of sexual violence as a tactic of war is totally abhorrent and sadly continues today unabated. We are shocked by the recent rape and gang rape of over 100 women and girls, some as young as 4 years old, according to a number of reports. We condemn in the strongest terms these heinous acts and support the UN's call for the immediate end to attacks against civilians.
The International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict was passed by the United Nations on June 19, 2015, with the objective of raising awareness of the need to end conflict-related sexual violence and to urge the international community to stand in solidarity with the survivors of the sexual violence around the world. This year's theme is the plight and rights of children born in war. The diplomats expressed their solidarity with the survivors of conflict-related sexual violence in South Sudan, noting that despite a signed 2015 ceasefire agreement, the warring parties continue to fight in several parts of the country and continue to commit crimes against women and children. Harrington says the foreign envoys in South Sudan are horrified by recent brutal attacks around Lier and Mayendit in former Unity State, as well as in Greater Equatoria.
Since the start of 2018, and despite the cessation of hostilities agreement and ongoing peace process, we have witnessed the deliberate targeting and killing of civilians, including children, disabled people, and the elderly, with some civilians being burned alive in their homes, abductions and mass displacement of populations, and attacks on medical and humanitarian personnel and facilities.
Both the government and the opposition parties have repeatedly denied the accusations. Harrington says the Western diplomats based in Juba want to see an end to all forms of abuse.
We call on all parties to the conflict to respect international humanitarian law and the cessation of hostilities agreement, and to condemn all forms of sexual and gender-based violence. We call on leaders to ensure that their forces and supporters do not engage in this appalling violence.
Harrington says commanders and the individuals responsible for the attacks on civilians, including sexual violence, must be held accountable. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An innovation in menstrual hygiene helps South Sudanese girls stay in school. Find out what that is when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can be done to improve crop production in your region?
Okay, to improve crop production, we need funding. And then the farmers, they need to be sensitized and trained for better ways of planting crops or trees for fruits.
Introducing irrigation systems. As we know, we're living in the dry season and the rains are not frequently falling. So the irrigation systems can help farmers to grow the recommended crops they need.
To improve crop production in my region, the farmers should be practicing crop rotation. For example, this season, they should either cultivate maize and the next season, soya. Like, the soya provides nutrients to the soil.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Two promising new ways to prevent cholera are on the horizon. One is an entirely new kind of vaccine. The other is as simple as a cup of yogurt. Both may offer fast, cheap protection from explosive outbreaks of a disease that claims tens of thousands of lives each year. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Cholera can kill within hours. A vaccine is available, but it's not perfect, says Harvard Medical School microbiologist Matthew Waldor.
It's not terrifically effective, maybe 50 to 80% efficacy. Usually it takes a couple of doses.
And it can take up to 2 weeks to start working. So Waldor and colleagues aim to make a better vaccine. They engineered cholera bacteria that are missing the genes that make the microbe toxic. They fed these bacteria to rabbits and then fed them normal, disease-causing cholera just 1 day later. It worked. Most of the rabbits lived. Those that did get sick took longer to do so than rabbits that did not get the modified bacteria. All of those animals died. If it works the same way in people, Waldor says that could help save more people's lives in an outbreak.
They might have more time to get to a healthcare facility. Like, people died in Haiti of cholera because they couldn't get to healthcare, not because there wasn't life-saving therapy.
Waldor's team found the engineered bacteria acted as a probiotic. The good microbes kept the bad microbes from getting a foothold in the animal's guts. And he thinks the modified bacteria will also act like a typical vaccine and trigger the body's immune system. That would provide long-lasting protection from future infections.
This is a new type of therapy. It's both a probiotic and a vaccine. We don't know the right name for it yet.
Speaking of probiotics, another group of scientists was working with bacteria commonly found in fermented dairy products like yogurt and cheese. The microbes are known as Lactococcus lactis, or L. lactis for short. The researchers wanted to genetically engineer L. lactis to fight cholera. But they discovered they didn't need to change a thing about these acid-producing microbes, says Massachusetts Institute of Technology bioengineer Jim Collins.
And cholera dislikes an acidic environment. So we're able to use L-lactase in its natural state.
They found that mice fed regular doses of L-lactase bacteria nearly doubled their survival rate from cholera infection.
It was remarkably surprising and satisfying in that we were really getting frustrated on our inability to effectively engineer L-lactase as this living therapeutic.
The research from both Collins and Waldor is published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. They both say it should be fairly easy and cheap to grow their microbial medicines when an outbreak strikes. But that's still a long way off. These are animal studies. They say it remains to be seen whether either approach works in people. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
And there's good health news for South Sudanese women and girls living in a refugee settlement of Uganda's Arua district. The British charity Oxfam has introduced reusable sanitary pads in the camps. And word is the move has greatly improved girls' attendance and performance in school. The initiative also educates women and girls about menstrual health and hygiene, and even allows some of them to earn a little money by selling the products to other refugees. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Uganda's West Nile district of Arua.
17-year-old Opani Janet, who attends a 4-3 primary school in Arua District's Rhino Camp, says she was forced to drop out of school in South Sudan in primary 5 because her family could not afford to buy her sanitary pads, and some boys at school joked about her condition during her menstruation.
When you're in class like this and your clothes get stained with the blood and you get scared of those boys because they sometimes laugh at you. Then you get scared, you go out.
Janet says thanks to the Oxfam initiative, which provides refugee school girls and young women with menstrual pads, she is able to continue her education and work toward achieving her dream of becoming a doctor. Adili Moniker, the senior woman teacher at the Ofua 3 primary school, says prior to receiving the Oxfam hygiene kit that includes reusable sanitary pads, underpants, soap and water buckets, girls were often humiliated at school.
The time we started, there was no support, whereby girls, some of the girls were missing in school. Once they get their periods, even I as a teacher, I could not advise them to stay. I just send them home, because I have no way of helping them.
Peace Immaculate Chandini is the Gender and Protection Officer for Oxfam in Arua. She says last year, her organization distributed some 800 female menstrual hygiene kits to girls in settlements in Arua and Yumbe. This year, she says Oxfam has distributed 500 kits. Adriko Richard, the Ofua 3 primary school head teacher, says the kits have had a huge impact on girls' enrollment and retention at schools across the district.
There is a great improvement in the performance of girls. It started with their retention in school. Since they are now constant in school, they have been attending lessons regularly. I can say their performance is now 75%. Compared to the previous one.
Chandini says the sanitary pads in the hygiene kits can be washed and reused over and over for an entire year, saving women and girls the trouble and expense of buying new ones every month. Oxfam has also introduced an environmentally friendly menstrual hygiene item called a Ruby Cup. Chandini says this cup-shaped rubber requires far less water to clean and can last up to 10 years. Kanya Harriet, a South Sudanese refugee at the Imvepi settlement in Arua, was among the first 20 women trained to use the Ruby Cup.
It can make you, maybe if you're going for school, you have to carry pads with you to the school, and accidentally someone will open your back and you come to see something there, you know. In other words, people may think it's embarrassing, but it's a normal thing. But with the cup, you just insert, you even move with your friend.
This year, an additional 80 women and even some men have been trained to promote the cup as the most viable alternative to disposable sanitary pads. Harriet says at first, many women resisted the idea due to certain misconceptions about the device, including suggestions that it was actually a birth control tool. Agustino Malesh, one of the men who helps educate women about their Ruby Cup, says convincing men, women and girls that the cup is safe and practical remains an uphill battle.
Most of the men say this thing will enlarge their women, and yet this thing is made in candle form. So we as men, we have a great role to teach our colleagues outside by showing them that this thing is not hard.
Shandini says despite Oxfam's efforts, maintaining good menstrual hygiene is not easy for most refugee girls and women.
Menstrual hygiene management is a challenge to many women and girls out there in the communities, and it's even worse, most especially for women and girls who are displaced by war, who are displaced by disaster.
She says promoting the use of reusable sanitary pads not only helps girls stay in school, but empowers women financially and is environmentally friendly. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
Action Monday, it was a very good day for the European teams. Sweden, Belgium, and England all scored victories. Joining us now with more details is VOA's Gwen Uten, who is kicking us off with England's captain.
England fans celebrated their big 2-1 victory over Tunisia on Monday, and all hail team captain Harry Kane.
Harry Kane! Harry Kane! Harry Kane!
We thought it was a really good game, but we thought we were going to cry before the end. Like, we thought we were never going to get our second goal. Huh? We loved it. It was a good game. And everything is great about Russia. Everyone's looked after us really well. Everything's been amazing.
He is the best person in the world. So good.
Thank you.
It's unbelievable, yeah.
Very happy.
We didn't see it coming.
Kane scored twice, including a last-gasp header in the 91st minute. England's spotlight was only overshadowed by the number of fans in attendance. Tunisia outnumbered England in fan size, but they all left the stadium disappointed.
Actually, I feel sad. It's a sadness because not only Tunisia, we are, I mean, four Arabic countries, none of them could at least do draw. All three of us lose in the 90 minutes. It's very sad. It's very sad, but meanwhile, we will not lose hope. We have a very good team, and we hope for better against Belgium. Thank you very much. We love Tunisia. Love you.
Tunisia will next play against Belgium in Group G on Saturday. In that same group, England will face Panama on Sunday. And speaking of Panama, they may have lost their 3-0 World Cup opener against Belgium, but these fans didn't seem to notice.
Nosotros, primer mundial. Todo el mundo dice Panamá cero.
This Panama fan says, it's our first World Cup. Everyone said Panama 0, Belgium 10. Belgium, it was by a miracle that you made 3 goals. A miracle. I like that attitude. Yes, Panama held their own in the first half, but Belgium scored all 3 goals in the second. Belgium fans said they were a bit shaken during that scoreless first half, but they're glad they came back strong.
Superb, superb, superb. We had to wait long for the first goal, but when once the first goal was there, was a rollover, but we were a bit anxious at halftime, but super feeling now. So we're going to have some party now.
Maybe they'll have more reason to celebrate after their next match on Saturday. Also on Monday, Sweden defeated South Korea 1-0 in their World Cup opening match, and South Korean fans left the stadium in tears.
Because we lost again, but I believe, I guess, I wish I will win the next game. Yeah, I hope.
Sweden dominated the game, yet missed a slew of chances before claiming victory in a 65th-minute penalty kick. And guess what made the difference? The video assistant referee! The VAR confirmed the penalty kick, Sweden won the match, and Swedish fans celebrated their first World Cup opening win since 1958.
I think it was a good match, and I think it was... nice for Sweden to win, and it was, they deserved to win.
It was fair for Sweden to win.
Yeah.
It was fair.
They had some really good chances in the first half, and then did score, but in the second half they did score, and then just go for defending all the game. So, yeah, it's a good victory.
Sweden next takes on Germany in Group F, along with South Korea and Mexico. Those matches will be played on Saturday. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington. Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ian. President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar are expected to meet tomorrow in Ethiopia's capital in their first face-to-face meeting in nearly 2 years. A Reuters report quotes a spokesman for Ethiopia's prime minister as saying the two principals will meet in Addis Ababa upon the invitation extended by His Excellency the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. South Sudan's ambassador to Ethiopia confirmed Kiir's plan and attendance in Addis. Several rounds of talks sponsored by regional bloc IGAD and its international partners have so far failed to impose a working peace deal or any meaningful ceasefire. South Sudan's opposition alliance warns it has no intention of signing a peace deal if it fails to give more positions to the government than to the opposition in any future transitional government. South Sudan's opposition alliance spokesman Kwaji Lasu tells this program that the latest proposal presented by IGAD to the warring parties gives President Kiir more power than opposition parties put together. He also says the alliance is not prepared to sign any deal that does not address the root cause of the conflict in South Sudan. And finally, on this International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflicts, the heads of mission of 9 Western countries, including the U.S., have called on all warring parties in South Sudan to stop using sexual and gender-based violence as a tactic of war. They also called on the opposition and government forces to abide by the cessation of hostilities agreement. In a joint statement, diplomats of Canada, Denmark, Japan, Holland, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United States say sexual violence is happening on a, quote, appalling scale with impunity in South Sudan, end quote, and they say it must stop. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Jerome by Simi.
To love me, Joro me, baby,
Joro me, Joro.
Kilo de, kilo de. Why you know they call me Kilo de, baby,
Kilo de, Joro.
I don't give you signal,
Joro me.
Why you know they see me,
Joro me.
I give you green light to tire,
Joro me, Joro.
I'ma kill on bubble,
Joro me.
Now you know they fumble,
Joro me.
I go shoot my shot, your Joro. So Joro, baby, take my number.
For me,
you talk say it like me. I be rolling, pardon.
Kilo de Joro.
I don't give you signal.
Joro me.
She, you know they see me.
Joro me.
I give you green light, fire.
Joro me, Joro.
I'm a killer, bubble.
Joro me.
Come my love, humble.
Joro me.
I go shoot my shot, yo, Joro. So, Joro.
listening to See Me with the song Joromi. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.